You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
First Nations listeners are advised that the following program may contain the names and voices of our mob who have passed on to the dreaming.
You're listening to Yellowman on 3CR, and I'm joined in the studio by two special guests. I might get you to introduce yourself just to start off with.
I am Hereditary Chief Namox of the Wet'suwet'en Nation, and our, as chiefs, we represent 22,000 square kilometers of unceded, undefeated, non-treaty lands. We are the authority on the land. The province of British Columbia and Canada only have assumed and presumed authority, and we're constantly at loggerheads over that because we know we are the land and the land is us.
Yeah. And what about yourself?
My name is Gwilachem Gabu. My taxpayer name is Jesse Stoppler. I'm Gixan, and I belong to Wilpspok, direct neighbors to Wet'suwet'en.
I like the way you put that too, your taxpayer name. That's good. So what brings you to so-called Australia?
So currently, in light of foreign invasions into our territories or our neighbor territories, there's a second gold rush mentality when it comes to resource extraction, and we happen to have a lot of these heavily sought after resources within our lands that we have stewarded since time immemorial. And one of these projects is a proposed 900 kilometer long LNG pipeline called Prince Rupert Gas Transmission Pipeline, or PRGT short. And it's connected to another proposed project that's the export terminal called Xilisms. And we're not having any of it. In short, Woodside, the Australian entity, is one of the corporations that's investing into that. And Woodside was proud to announce that they're putting emphasis on free, prior, and informed consent, or FPIC, which I find laughable. But we're here to first of all gain firsthand experience on how Woodside handles Indigenous title and right to lands and resources at their own doorstep, before they even try to set foot on ours. And so far, it's been absolutely clear to us that they're following the footsteps of other racist corporations that really don't give a shit about Indigenous people and their rights and our lands. And rather than sitting on a Zoom call, we tend to step right into their living room and tell them what's up. I think that's what leaders do. Leaders don't talk. They take action, and that's what we're here to do.
Yeah, and yeah, Woodside, they've got an absolutely atrocious history here as well. They've blown up so many of our sacred sites. For example, we've got sacred sites and rock art sites that are, you know, over 10,000 years old, and they just come in and blow it up so they can get at the natural resources underneath it.
You know, there's following the same pattern in Canada, like our territory of the Gitxsan and the Wet'suwet'en, where they simply get a simple amendment to a cultural heritage and it disappears. It means nothing.
Yeah.
And I constantly remind people, like, if we did that, like to their grave sites, we go to jail. Yeah. They get nothing. Nothing. It's an amendment on a piece of paper, and oh, well, we'll come back in a decade and say, I'm sorry. Yeah. And yet all of the history, these are our family members. We cry, we hurt. And then they want to know how we're going to react violently. And I'm like, I'm not going to waste that energy on you boys, but I will make sure you never do it again.
Yeah.
And just to be very clear, as Gixxan and Wet'suwet'en, we've taken this to the Supreme Court level in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And I'm so thankful and grateful for the many decades that our ancestors have spent away from their families in courtrooms, a long ways from home, and it's a privilege for me to be here and to walk in these footsteps now. But I don't think that the landscape has changed much. And this is something that needs to be acted on. And I think as Indigenous people, as title holders, we do just that. It doesn't take a lot of words, really.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it's a very long struggle and fight that you've been fighting over there as well. So I watched a documentary recently, actually. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but
Yinta.
Yeah, that's the one, Yinta. Is that a similar sort of area?
That is us.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's 10-year documentary. You watch a little boy at the beginning of the film. He's on watching a cartoon on a laptop, and then you see this teenager. That's the same boy.
Yeah. It's such a long struggle and such a long fight, but, you know, it's hats off to you for, you know, keeping at it and for coming over here as well and confronting them over here in their own backyards. It's,
you know, well, you should meet our women.
Yeah.
If you're impressed, they'll just absolutely, really, I'm it never ceases to amaze me how strong these women are.
Yeah.
How much courage they show and yet remain to stay soft at the core and be humans. That's a constant struggle, and Namax and myself and many other men step into these realms to be there, not right beside them, or not right behind them, but right beside them.
Yeah.
And strengthen them, and that's the very least we can do. We're a matrilineal society, and women are decision makers and holders of power and truth for us.
Yeah.
Even as a high chief, yes, I'm a high chief, but I don't do nothing without the direction of our women. It is truly the way that democracy is supposed to work. It comes from our people, goes to the next level, from the family to the house to the clan to the nation. Then it comes to the chief. They call me the head push because it is their words they give to me and I push it out for the world to hear. But it can only be done with truly the backing of the nation itself. I can't, as Chief Namok, say, I think or I say. No, it is we because it is our voice.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the way it should be. You know, we're very similar over here. Like, so I'm actually from Yuin Nation, which is up on the south coast of New South Wales, about 1,000 kilometres away from here. But, you know, over up there, it's the same sort of thing. Like, we're traditionally matrilineal society, and, you know, our women are very staunch, you know, a lot stauncher than most of our men, if not all of our men. I like the way that you talk about, like, that, you know, what it is to be an actual real leader, because, you know, that's what leading is. It's not coming up with your own decisions and, you know, running your own race. It's,
well, I'm not a politician. Yeah. The Prime Minister of Canada, the new Prime Minister, he says he's only there for cutting ribbons. As chiefs, we're not there for cutting ribbons. We are to deliver the message. And the very fact that if you don't listen to your people, then that gives what we'll call an enemy, which is now corporations and the government itself of Canada and provincial, the opening to divide and conquer you more. And if you speak with one voice, that is strength. That is purely what the future needs. It can't be what they're putting us through currently. And when we think about ourselves as sovereign, it's more than a word. It has to be the way you live. It has to be the way you live off the land, the way you caretake that land, because we don't own it. We don't own that land. It owns us. Our duty is to that land, because that land is there to look after the next generations. Gwilakum Gubu always says, our parents and grandparents promised us to leave the land as good, if not better, than when they were born to it. That is our duty to the future. And when you get threats happening to it, you're threatening a nation, you're threatening a culture, you're threatening the heart, the human, and the future of this planet. Quite often people will ask us, is it a heavy burden? Well, it depends on your viewpoint. When you have a duty to the land, it's not a burden, it's an honor.
Yeah, I love the way you put that. Tomorrow night, you got a gig on at Trades Hall. Do you want to talk a bit more about that and just break it up for the listeners, encourage them to get along?
Yeah, I think it's really more about sharing experiences. We're trying to be really mindful about stepping into these spaces and not have it appear that we're actually bringing a recipe to the table. There are plenty of things that have worked for us, and there's also plenty of things that didn't work for us. We've made mistakes. It's super important to learn from that. I think Western society is just so hesitant to ever look back and learn from their past or learn from other people's mistakes. And so, yeah, we just really want to be super clear about the fact that we're not here to tell people how this is done. We're guests in this country, and we remind ourselves of that on a daily basis. And even though we might be speaking at this event, I think we're showing up with two ears and one mouth, and that's something that is it's just really mindful, I think.
Yeah. So it's on at the Trades Hall tomorrow night.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're listening, get along to that one. Do you know if it's a ticketed event or if people can just rock
it's
up?
It's free. Yeah. I think we're feeding people, it's gonna be Namox and myself and the rest of the delegation and some friends and allies.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're listening, definitely get along to that one. It's
6:15, I believe, at the Victorian Trades Hall.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're listening, get along there tomorrow night. It's a great chance to actually hear a bit more about, you know, what's happening over there and, you know, how you can support and just to build those connections and relationships, because it's so important as well to build those relationships and build those connections. You know, at the end of the day, we're both fighting the same kind of enemy here, and if we can be united in that fight, we'll be so much more stronger.
I'm a firm believer that the human connection is the most powerful weapon we'll ever have. Mm. And so I enjoy going to these because I love looking at the crowd, listening to the crowd, and their body language will tell me a lot. And with their heart, it'll open their ears and their mind. It is so powerful just to be together.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's good to see he's over here as well. Do you have any plans to catch up with any of the blackfellas over here while he's here, or...?
Yeah, so we've already spent a fair bit of time. We've been to I think we landed in Melbourne, went to Canberra, and then back to Perth, and then up to Karratha, and then the same trip in reverse. We'll be here for a little bit in Melbourne, and then we're off to Sydney, and eventually we'll make our way home.
Yeah,
yeah. Came here from Malaysia, doing similar work. Petronas is holds what used to be a 25% stake in this very same fossil gas project. They have since, I think, sold off a little bit of that ownership, but they still hold roughly 20%. And similar to Woodside and others, and none of these corporations have ever reached out to our people, the original owners, custodians, stewards of the lands and resources. And sometimes we take a bit of issue with the word owners. That seems to be a Western term. It's very clear to us that the land owns us. Yeah. Like we're connected. Like everything else, there's interconnectivity. We are the land and the land is us. So who knows who owns who here? But matter of fact is that we rely on a healthy ecosystem. We rely on each other as humans. We rely on this environment. It has provided for us for thousands of years. And at the very least we can do is to stand up for the land when the land needs us.
Yeah.
To protect itself from us. as weird as that sounds, but. Yeah, we're part of the problem as humans. And so we showed up at Petronas and a few others, knocked at some doors, and dropped off a human rights violation complaint that we're currently leading against the co-ownership between all of these entities. And that's when we made this trip to your country here. This project Woodside is getting involved with does not really exist. I mean, it exists, but it doesn't have the final investment decision as of yet. So it's more about often it's a fake it until you make it approach for these projects.
And
this is certainly still in the faking it phase, but this will be a good time for Australians to understand that. On behalf of Woodside, they're getting involved in the human rights violation right now.
Yeah.
And the very fact, you know, if they can come in and do as they please and not even let the people of this country know truly what's happening. And, you know, the advantage they think they have is to have elected government say, okay, go ahead. It's free and clear. Go ahead. That's not the truth.
Yeah.
And when we want to meet with Woodside, they won't meet with us. So we come here. Why not?
Yeah.
We are very good at knocking at doors. If they don't want to meet with us, that's fine. But we need to meet with the people to make them aware of what's happening. Because a lot of countries are so controlled by money, they'll control the media. And the truth doesn't get out there. Why not go in person and tell the truth? Talk of your heart. Talk of your children. Talk of the land. What we depend on. And not let the narrative get out of control with governments and industry controlling it. It has to be the human.
Yeah, yeah. And it's such an important job to do as well, like, especially in places like, you know, so-called Australia here. The general Australian population, they don't really know what's going on. Like, they don't know what's going on necessarily in their own backyard here with all these, you know, fossil fuel companies, let alone what they're doing elsewhere in the world. Like, one thing I like to bring up a lot is the fact that Australian mining companies are actually today operating on the biggest scale across the continent of Africa. You know, it's not France, it's not Belgium, it's not the UK. It's Australian mining companies that are absolutely raiding Africa today. But you go and speak to your average Australian and they probably don't even know we've got mining companies in Africa.
Oh, we have a long story, yeah.
Yeah, in Canada, they allow them to register in our country. They're not Canadian mining companies. And yet they're allowed to go under the umbrella of Canada. Because Canada has this your reputation of a great and caring country. Well, we don't see it from our viewpoint. All I've seen in the last over a decade is a barrel of a gun, the attack dogs, they burned down our homes. You've watched the video. They come through our doors with axes and power saws and snipers. That's the Canada I know. I don't want that for future generations. My normal should not be the normal for the next generation. I don't get afraid when I step outside the door and there's snipers pointing guns at me. I don't get afraid because it happens so often.
Yeah.
But I am afraid that they'll have the power to continue it to the next generation. And that should never happen. I speak at the UN on human rights issues. Why can't Canada be held accountable? I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here. But Canada has received three letters from the United Nations on the treatment of ourselves, which they simply have ignored. And yet Canada is part of the United Nations. There is something very wrong when the truth can't get out there and it gets buried. And that's what we do. We want people to listen. We want to look them in the eye. We're human. We have hearts. We care. We want a future for our children and grandchildren. And if we can't express it, we definitely can't afford to allow politicians to take our words because they'll twist it to their advantage.
Yep.
Every time they've done it. I'm going to share that also in the past, Indigenous people have given elected prime ministers of our country's traditional names. And one of them being Walking Eagle. Do you know why? Because they're so full of shit, they can't fly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to be very clear that this is not to blame. This has nothing to do with Australians. Mm-hmm. In the very same fashion that it has nothing to do with Canadians. 65% of the worst mining companies around the world are Canadian. Denise and Amox mentioned this very eloquently, but this polite Canada that people think exists, the reputation that Canada has been abusing around the world to bulldoze their way through Indigenous lands, to steal resources, that is absolutely against human rights. That is not what Canadians stand for. I'm sure that's not what Australians stand for. And during our visit here, we've met some outstanding humans. And it truly feels like we're home away from home, and Australians cannot be blamed for that. In all these years that we've been fighting industry, I regret that it took me so long to learn that it's not industry that we're fighting. We should be fighting our own governments. Mm-hmm. After all, that is who is making all of this possible. That's who green lights. Racist policies, subhuman conditions on behalf of the people. And that is not okay. And I think that it's construed in a way that nobody really understands what's going on so that this can exist in the background. And it's really good to shine a light on it. And wherever you see it, call bullshit, call it out. And and absolutely be clear to just have it fuck off.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, as you're saying, there's so much propaganda to try and, like, confront, you know, all this propaganda about being these nice, friendly, you know, human rights abiding nations. Like, we know that the colonies aren't that. You know, they're not that for Indigenous people. They've never been that for Indigenous people, whether it's here or whether it's Canada or, you know, whether it's, you know, any of the other British colonies. You know, it's such a long fight that we've all been fighting as well. And, you know, as you're saying, we just need to get more people to know, more people to, like, realise what's happening, you know, in their name, essentially, from their governments, and the fact that, you know, all these violations are happening, and hopefully that can push the masses to at least do something to, you know, try and, like, call out their government to try and stop the green lighting of all this stuff, because at the end of the day as well, it's not just about us as Indigenous people, it's about everyone. Yeah. You know, once the climate's screwed, like, doesn't matter if you're black, white, brindle, doesn't matter, you know, what nationality or race you are, you're screwed as well. Your kids have got no future, and it's...
Oh, for many of you rely on clean air and clean water.
Yeah.
And, you know, with governments and industry, they'll create industries to divide and conquer. And then you get fighting amongst yourself while they continue in a straight line.
Yeah.
That is strategy. And we've had it so that we can stand back and witness it. I was drug into it a number of years ago where I was pointing fingers at some of our own people. And I said, no, these are our people. They were raised with love and kindness. Maybe they got sidetracked. But our law says from cradle to grave, we're one and we care for each other. I got caught in that trap, and I truly regret it, because I was having evil thoughts of other humans when I should be attacking the real target. Mm. And it was taking so much energy from me. I was ready to pack it in, but I'm a chief. You never pack it in. You go forward. I can't lead from a back room. I need to lead from the front. Yeah. And we need to show our people that anybody can stand up. Anybody can use their voice and do it with love and care. But remember also, those people want to hurt you. So be prepared to make sure you're strong enough to do it. I'm not a very heavy set guy, but I have really thick skin.
Yeah, you need it with these sort of, you know, these sort of fights. It's just
so yeah.
Constant.
What it is like we're fighting is collectively, I think we're facing a moving goalpost when it comes to people standing up against our own governments and industry. Most recently, within so-called British Columbia, we saw the implementation of Bill 14 and 15 that kind of blazed the trail for a federal counterpart, Bill C-5. That is designed to fast-track mega projects and infrastructure in the name of national interest. These projects are referred to as ponies, projects of national interest, and we were really clear that that's not a pony, that's a Trojan horse.
Mm.
And so I wasn't surprised to learn that you're facing a very similar condition here right now, with changing legislature or legislative framework that's very similar to these fast track laws that we now have. And it circumvents necessary environmental steps, assessments, and also connected enforcement to that. And most of all, it cuts a lot of time. It takes governments years to get projects through the approval stage, to a permitted stage, to then have financiers green light with a final investment decision. And under this this new law, this can be done probably in a couple of years, mm-hmm. max. And that's because everyone's jumping on this fossil gas LNG train a little bit late. The market's already shit. We're facing a coming supply glut, and Canada wants to jump on this to make a quick buck. When in reality, it is foreign ownership that pushes these projects through our lands, that takes our resources. Furthermore, Canadian taxpayers and ratepayers of connected infrastructure are being forced to pay for all of this. So not only are we giving away resources, we're paying other countries to take our resources. seems absolutely ridiculous and couldn't be farther away from national interest.
Mm.
But when it comes to Gigsand and Wet'suwet'en, we do have the interest of our nations that really guides our decision making. And so early on we talked a little bit about the treaty process, and with all due respect, I don't know too much about this upcoming treaty that is going to be signed here in Victoria. But I can tell you that I have never seen a treaty that actually worked in our country. And really the only thing I think that really works for Indigenous people is ultimate jurisdiction over your land, over your people, over your resources. And that is up to us as Indigenous people to implement, not to wait for someone else to grant it to us. I think if you have the power to sign a treaty, you have had this power to be sovereign all along, and you're reducing the amount of decision-making power by signing treaties rather than just implementing your title, right? And living it on a daily basis. We call it the FAFO approach. Fuck around and find out.
Yeah.
And you got to realize, too, that when they do it, I often come up with the word monitoring. Who's going to monitor what, whether it be treaties, whether it be environment or what industry does? Right now, the way Canada is, with Bill C-5, that, you know, the Prime Minister of Canada, is Prime Minister Carney and his carnival are putting on. And the very fact that, guess who does the monitoring to protect the environment? The very industry that's in destroying it.
Yeah,
and so when we talk about treaties, we've never signed it because it says right there, the most land we would ever get and stay in control of would be 13% of our territory. Mm-hmm. They get 87% at the stroke of a pen. Well, it doesn't matter. Some people will say, well, you've got forestry, you've got mining. You know, there's not one operating mine on our territory. They're all shut down, and they have been shut down for well over a decade.
Nice.
But now we get the pipelines coming in, then they create armed forces to come and attack us. But then the monitoring part of itself is us to do it and make sure they understand. It's hard because they think they're in control. No, you always follow your heart. We always say, without culture, without land, there's no future. Mm. So we rely on that. And that's what gives us our strength to do it. But make sure you surround yourself with them very intelligent people. We are so gifted in that way that in the outreach, we can line up people. And we don't want people hating each other. You hate the goddamn game, not the player.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really like what you're saying about treaty and stuff as well. Because, you know, I'm not a firm believer in treaty. I'm against treaty and, you know, have been for many, many years. Part of the reason being, you know, you just have a look at all of these other treaties, like the treaties in, you know, so-called Canada and so-called United States and even New Zealand and stuff. They've all been breached. You know, they're all broken. And at the end of the day, like, as you're saying, all they do is actually restrict the sovereignty that you do have. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm fully against the treaty
and
process.
They come up to you and they say, oh, we'll fix it. I'm sorry. Mm. And I've said it numerous times. Are they sorry they actually did the wrong, or are they sorry they got caught?
Yeah, yeah. And funny you bring that up. We actually had an apology, I'm using my air quotes here for the listeners. You know, we had an apology yesterday from the Victorian state government, and, you know, apologizing for the genocide that's happened and that's continuing to happen here, but they haven't stopped. You know, what's the point of saying sorry if you're going to keep doing it? It's just, yeah, as you're saying, you know, sorry you got caught out. That's what it's really about.
I'm laughing. It's not funny, but this is the same page of the same playbook that is being used on a global scale. You know, by definition, a treaty is to formally ratify an agreement between countries, nation to nation.
Mm-hmm.
You have it right there. That means you're being recognized as a nation. You're being recognized as a country. So in our case, that just gave us more energy to act on exactly that. We are a nation. We are a country. We're not Canada.
Yeah.
So if you want to seek an agreement with us, it first of all would be on our terms, and secondly, it would never come at the loss or expense of more territory or resources. So it's very much like these impact benefit agreements that come with industry sometimes. And I say this often, if you only have the power to say yes, but not to say no, you're not holding power. And that's what I see in treaties.
Yeah.
And it's the same as if somebody invites you to dinner, be careful because you may be on the menu.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the way that you put that. That's very, very true for the situation.
I actually stole that from Guila.
We got about 5 minutes left in the show. Is there anything else you wanted to quickly touch on, or any other events you wanted to promote? Or
Number one, I want to say thank you to the people of Australia. We've been treated very, very well. And the very fact that we can wake up in the morning, talk to people and have the same concern, same heart. I love your language. I've never swore so much in my life and I've learned a lot. But I mean, the very fact that you could travel this far, you can't get much farther on this planet from our home than where we are or were recently. But the very fact is the concerns are the same. The issues are the same. And I think part of the solution is the same too. One heart, one mind, one voice. That's how you move forward. And don't let these corporations or entities, and whether it be the police or private security, think that they have the upper hand. They simply don't. You know, there are two things that you have to willingly give up. Your dignity and your pride. You have to willingly give it up. They can't take it. So remember, keep your dignity, keep your pride, because that is the future for our children. Thank you.
No, well said.
And I think as united as you can stand, that's really where you want to be as a country. It should never be an argument against people that work in this industry. As a parent myself, I know what it takes to look after your children and your family, and there are plenty of people that work in this industry, and they're very good people. It's still a really good idea for everyone to follow the money and see where your resources are going. When I followed a little bit to see where Australian LNG and other fossil gas products are headed, they're not to really meet the need of Australians. These are products that are going to the international market. They're being flipped when it looked like, from what I can tell, there was plenty of need for some of these resources right here in your own in your own backyard. So it's very similar to what we're seeing, and we're just tired of seeing all of this walk away from our lands, and we're being held in legislated poverty.
Yeah, exactly.
That creates dependency, and with that dependency comes power from industry and power from governments, and that's headed for a bad crash.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks, Heath, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. It's been a really good discussion. And, just one more time. Tomorrow night at 6:15, was it?
6:15, yes.
6:15 at Trades Hall. Head on down and, meet these followers, hear a bit more about what's going on and connect a bit more. Don't go anywhere. Coming up next, we've got DJ Curly with Cultural Kinetics. This has been Yilliman. Have a good one.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.